Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. Hey, this is Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them, the show that tells the stories about the things that divide Americans.
The House Committee on the Judiciary will come to order. Without objection, the chair is authorized to declare recesses of the committee.
I object.
Objection noted.
And speaking about things that divide Americans,
we are conducting this hearing on the impeachment inquiry into President Donald J. Trump.
I've been spending a lot of time watching the impeachment hearings. If I'm in my home office, the TV's tuned into the hearings. And if I'm in my car, I've got NPR's coverage dialed in.
Here is how the committee will proceed for this hearing.
I mean, what can I say? I loved watching this kind of thing when I was a kid. I watched hours and hours of the Watergate hearings, even though I didn't really understand what was going on. And I remember watching Henry Hyde, Bob Barr, Lindsey Graham, and others make the impeachment case against President Bill Clinton. During each, there was plenty to divide us, but there were also things that people agreed on. For example, I remember many Democrats conceding that President Clinton's behavior was problematic and needed to be addressed. What seems different this time is that no one wants to give an inch. It's truly an us and them standoff. This is most apparent when you flip around cable news. Fox News has one narrative, and CNN offers a completely different take.
It tells a story of conspiracy at the highest levels of our government. Conspiracy to extort. That's what it is. This is not about quid pro quo, right? That cute little phrase.
All right, tonight, the Democrats' psychotic, mindless, anti-Trump rage, psychosis, sinking to new depths of depravity. What was a disastrous day for them as they pursue Trump every second, minute, hour of every day. They are hurting the country. They are ripping this country apart.
This is about extortion, a conspiracy to extort a foreign power for the political benefit of the president of the United States.
Democrats thought we, the stupid, smelly, Trump-supporting Walmart shoppers that believe in God of America, need to be educated on the virtues of impeachment.
Democrats say they're fulfilling their constitutional duty and advocating for the principles of our democratic republic. Republicans say the case is a political partisan stunt aimed at nullifying the outcome of the 2016 election. When I started this whole us and them project, I realized our nation seemed polarized. But this impeachment process has me thinking we're even more divided than I thought. And I've been wondering how we got here. I read a recent article by Bob Garfield. You might know Bob. He's the co-host for the NPR program On the Media. In his piece, he expresses concern that Americans seem to have lost faith and respect for democracy and its institutions. He cites a bunch of surveys to support this notion. One poll blew me away. It asked about 1,500 adults, how important is democracy to American society? And only 39% of young adults, ages 29 and under, said it is absolutely important. Well, reading this alarmed me. And it alarmed Bob Garfield and several of his colleagues. They wondered how and why appreciation for democracy has plummeted. And then they decided to do something about it. They started an initiative called the Purple Project for Democracy. A few weeks ago, I sat down with Bob in his studio to talk about it. And he shared with me another data point that he sees as alarming.
More than 29% of the public recently expressed support for either a strong leader or army rule. Army rule! People are so discouraged, disaffected, in some cases feeling so betrayed by the American democracy as it has played out over 243 years, that they are, you know, they're shopping for something different. And the things they're shopping for are just, you know, beyond the pale.
Well, okay. So it sounds like if you're going to have a project like this, you feel that democracy is in peril. And if it is, who's to blame?
It's a combination of, in my view, identity politics yielding an equal and opposite reaction in the identity politics realm, where the right has kind of expropriated the rage of the left and has decided it is a put-upon minority that has gradually over 60 years seen its values tramped upon by liberal democracy. And, you know, they think they're under siege. And then there, of course, is the social justice war on the left, where various aggrieved parties have been systematically chipping away at genuine biases and inequities in the system. And the consequence is that we have formed very hostile tribes.
You cited some statistics that you mentioned before about people who feel like we would want to we'd be better with a strong arm or an army government. I know in an article that you wrote in Current, you cited several other alarming statistics. I'm looking at one that says 23% of Americans up to age 29 say that democracy is a fairly bad or a very bad idea. And I guess I'm wondering, is that because we have lost sight of living in an undemocratic system?
Russia, Turkey, Croatia, Hungary, Poland, Philippines, Myanmar, Republic of Congo, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Philippines, Nicaragua, Venezuela. Yes, we have problems, and they're not trivial problems. But they are problems that, you know, are by orders of magnitude worse in societies where citizens enjoy none of the political freedoms that we take for granted. The tools of democracy in this country have been largely expropriated for nefarious goals. But nonetheless, the solution is not to look elsewhere. The solution is to use democratic methods to fix democracy here.
Does it have anything to do with how we're learning civics? I mean, are young people learning the fundamentals of democracy?
No. I mean, some are. In some states, the civics curriculum is fairly robust, but in the majority of states, it is not. It has been squeezed out. In most states and most school districts within those states by things like STEM studies. You know, and this happened especially under the Obama administration, but also standardized testing, which vastly increased during the George W. Bush administration. And, you know, something has to go. We have time and space issues to deal with here. There are only so many hours in the school day, and social studies in general have been neglected, and most particularly civics education.
Garfield says how and what we teach kids plays an essential role in maintaining a robust democratic system. But representative government can be a messy, complicated approach. It requires that we work together, which lately seems very difficult. We the Purple aims to strengthen the tenets of democracy by encouraging people to get involved.
Purple is not a kind of sort of a hands across the aisle exercise. There are people doing that, and God bless them, but that's not what we're about. What we're about is trying to get people not to throw out the democracy baby with the political chaos and polarization bathwater. And because if you surrender on that, you know, there's really no turning back. So we're not saying kumbaya. We are saying get a grip, and just instead of dwelling on frustration, try to dwell instead on and to meditate on the freedoms that we do have and embrace them. And by the way, strengthen them by participating in the process. Now, you were asking me where this all comes from, and I told you about identity politics and all that stuff, and propaganda and so forth. Another thing that has happened is fragmentation in media. So there used to be, in the bad old days, a kind of hegemony of media voices which were kind of the arbiters over acceptable political thought and acceptable political speech and acceptable policy alternatives. And the fringe in those days was on the fringe. And there were there was a limited number of TV networks and news magazines and daily newspapers. And that was the source of our information. But now, thanks to the ultimate democracy of the internet, we are now inundated with all sorts of noise.
Right.
And some of it intentionally dangerous, some of it accidentally dangerous, but all of which is antithetical to the idea of having an accepted set of principles, values, and fundamental truths. When things like science become politicized, you need a little bit of media hegemony to make sure America doesn't go off the rails. But the hegemons are now not news organizations, but two tech companies, Google and Facebook. And what they do on the Facebook news feed and YouTube and Google News and so forth is they trap individual citizens through their algorithms in filter bubbles, which result in exposing them not to the great democracy of ideas, but rather to a handful of often poisonous, fact-free ideas that simply validate and revalidate and revalidate some sort of angry worldview.
Bob, as you know, my show is called Us and Them. And I know that you're very familiar with that us and them dynamic, that we, us, are the good guys and that we're trustworthy and we're righteous. And them, those people, are the people we can't trust and they're the cause of all of our problems. How does this sense of us and them play into the erosion of democracy?
The more polarized we become, the more polarized we are destined to become, unless there's some intervening event. Like a terrorist attack or a war or some other, generally a catastrophe that brings the country together. But the prognosis for polarization is usually more polarization. And it's obviously destructive, but the thing about in us and them is that there are an us and a them. There are different ways of perceiving the world. I mean, I finally learned that lesson 25 years ago or so in the OJ trial when, like most white Americans, I got the verdict and I went, what? What the? What? And most black Americans are going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, because they finally saw reflected in a court verdict, the reality that they live every day.
You know, as you mentioned that, I was working in a New York law firm, and I remember I ducked into the office to listen to the OJ verdict with an attorney there. And the verdict happened, and as I walked through the halls of this white shoe New York law firm, you could have heard a pin drop. And I took some documents down to the duplicating department, which was mostly black and Hispanic people. And there was, it was like a party going on. It was high-fiving people running around the room, coming up and slapping my hand in the air. I mean, it was, that was a time where there was just something very different in the zeitgeist as to two different realities. That, and in a way, you're saying that those two different realities are kind of what we are experiencing right now in America.
Yeah, well, I think so. I mean, I don't think it's a perfect analog, but I think it's pretty close. And each side of the sort of red and blue divide feels righteous. Each side feels aggrieved. Each side feels that it has been imposed upon, and that it's, and that has unjustly been marginalized. I mean, it's amazing. The set of grievances are kind of identical. And what has changed in the last, let's say, 5 years is that the political right has coalesced that grievance into a movement that, you know, we call Trumpism. I'm not sympathetic to the underlying grievances, particularly, but I am on a human level sympathetic to a group of people who believe that their values have been trampled upon for, you know, decades, and who feel like they're strangers in their own country. I think they're wrong. I mean, I think liberal democracy and the Bill of Rights are just right, just about right. But I understand how we got to this point.
After a short break, Bob Garfield tells me how the Purple for Democracy project plans to go beyond news reporters and media organizations and connect with other purple people.
The notion of purple is, it's really a marketing idea. To put a brand to awareness, inspiration, and participation in the value of democracy.
I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them from West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX. This program is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation.
In difficult times, music gives us peace, brings us together, and helps heal us. It calms our nerves and brightens our days. That's why we're bringing you classic episodes of Mountain Stage on air and in our podcast. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find something that's familiar or brand new and feel the power of live music on our website, mountainstage.org.
I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them. Let's rejoin my conversation with Bob Garfield, host of WNYC and NPR's program On the Media, as well as the instigator and collaborator of the Purple Project for Democracy. Is part of the problem of where we are right now, this rancor that we're feeling in the country, does it have to do with the fact that America's longtime dominant majority, white Christians, believe that they're on the verge of becoming a political minority?
Well, I think that's a huge part of it, and the data bear that out, and so do the poll results, and from a strictly demographic point of view, it's true. What isn't true is that somehow by being outnumbered by the many, 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 ethnic cohorts of that have always been part of America, that they are somehow marginalized in the society and the culture. Just not true. The people who most fear that are the people least exposed to the consequences of the changing demographics of the country. What they are exposed to is maybe having a black supervisor at work, maybe, you know, not being able to squeeze the butt of a colleague or tell a dirty joke, which, you know, you tell a joke and you wind up, tell a dirty joke that you told 20 years ago, and everybody says, you're something, you're a caution, Bill. And now you're in HR, right? All of a sudden you're in some sort of sensitivity training, and it just, you seethe because it's not just society reckoning with historic institutional structural bias. No, it's you. We're telling you you're not good enough. And, you know, I'm no psychologist. In fact, there's a number of things that I hold forth on that I'm not an expert in, but I know that's got to write smart. So the notion of purple it's really a marketing idea. To put a brand to awareness, inspiration, and participation in the value of democracy. And thereby to strengthen democracy by encouraging participation in the process. Whether that means canvassing for a candidate or testifying before the zoning hearing board or running for U.S. Senate, there are a lot of ways to participate. And complacency and bitterness are the forces, not polarization, that are most likely to destroy American democracy. And we have to turn that around. And of course, we have a plan.
What role does the news media play in perpetuating or encouraging this polarization?
I'm going to give you three or four really solid reasons why the news media should have absolutely nothing to do with this. One reason is that if you ask, the public has been hearing now for years that the news media is not just an opposition party, but an enemy of the people.
I've stood in a Trump rally when he says they're the enemy of the people, and it's really odd being in a room where people just kind of look at you and boo you. It feels odd.
Yeah, and to your previous point, there is an us and a them. But so if the media now are asked, as they're being asked by the Purple Project, to kind of join arm in arm to talk about democracy, to do pieces about the construction of democracy, the history of democracy, the functions of democracy, what a society looks like in a vacuum of democracy, and so forth, all of a sudden they are becoming the very monolith that the political right has accused them of being, right? Most news stories that show up on your TV or on your newspaper or on your phone began with something that the reporter encountered, not something that was dictated from above, whether by the immediate assignment editor or some cigar-chomping publisher or George Soros or the Koch brothers, right? But the moment everybody says, yeah, we're on board with purple, aha, someone can say, it's just as we always said. The newspapers are they're a fifth column, and this is part of their plan to brainwash America. So that's one reason I might be a little skittish if I were a public radio station or a newspaper, you know, some other news organization. Another is that the media economy is in the toilet, and our resources to cover even the most basic beats of journalism in communities and states around the country are dwindling every day. There are layoffs. We have fewer than 50% of the personnel out covering the news than we did 15 years ago. The newspapers used to be enormously profitable, and TV stations, now they're barely profitable or in the red. And the new online publications only, you know, the digital native publications, they're also in the red, being funded by venture capitalists and so forth.
Right.
And other suckers. And as a consequence, you know, how the hell do we do the proactive work of supporting democracy apart from what we do every day? And we're just not going to turn that into a separate initiative. What we do every day just has to speak for itself.
So As part of the Purple Project for Democracy, you have challenged news organizations to devote the month of November to 2019 to focusing on stories and programs that remind the nation about the story of democracy. How have news media organizations responded?
Well, let's have a look, shall we? I just happen to have the website right here.
Bob, say the name of the website for...
It's wethepurple.org, and it's hashtag WeThePurple, and the handles are at JoinWeThePurple.
And as you're scrolling around the computer, I see like stories from The Washington Post, CNN...
That's an NPR show, Hidden Brain. The Retro Report, which was formerly a New York Times organization, but is now independent. One of my favorite things on the We the Purple website is from New Hampshire Public Radio. It's a show called Civics 101. And it is absolutely the Purple Project in its purest manifestation. And it just talks about how stuff works. You know, it talks about checks and balances. It talks about the various powers of the three branches of government. It talks about rule of law. It talks about Marbury v. Madison. I mean, it's just kind of like a basic course in civics, but made palatable through the genius of New Hampshire Public Radio producers.
So, Bob, it seems to me that when you put the call out to people to create content in November about how democracy works, it seems like Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff got your memo. And I guess I want to know, how do you think the impeachment process is playing out to the nation as an exercise in democracy?
Well, that is a really good question. First of all, I'm delighted that they were so gracious as to do this in November. I want to thank the chairman and the speaker for doing this in November. It is a civics lesson in many, many ways. It talks about the powers of the executive. It is a demonstration of the oversight responsibility of the legislative branch. It shows an article of the Constitution in action, and I'm hoping that it will disabuse Americans of certain myths about hoaxes and witch hunts and so forth. When they see the process in action, perhaps they will be less likely to buy the idea that somebody's getting railroaded here, that this is due process and according to constitutional guidelines. I'm hoping.
You and I are in the public media universe, and you have said that we share part of the blame. So what else can we learn from the Purple Project for Democracy? What can you suggest to us to how we can reframe how democracy and elections are covered?
If you've paid any attention to the show for 20 years, you know that we on the media institutionally hate the way elections are covered, because it's just all horse race. It's all gaffes and horse race and who's what the polls say today and what they said 5 minutes ago and what the fundraising battles are and who's going to be in the debate and who isn't going to be in the debate and what's the effect of Tulsi Gabbard's white pantsuit and all this stuff that just doesn't f***ing matter. What matters is policy, a little bit of due diligence on the history of the candidates, and somewhat their comportment, and certainly their resumes, and a sense of, should they be elected, what will happen next? And we don't get much of that. What we get instead is this very, very bombastic coverage of a sporting event.
With trying to put an emphasis back on democracy, what's at stake if we don't get it right?
Very, very little. Except political freedom, social and economic justice, and our entire way of life. If those are unimportant to you, don't sweat it. But if the cornucopia of liberties that we enjoy as American citizens isn't entirely obvious to you, you need to be shopping around for the other systems. And because we cannot let this nightmare of this current political polarization divert us from the central fact that American democracy is like nothing that has ever existed on Earth. No people has ever been endowed by its constitution these inalienable rights. And if you look at these data and you see that large percentages of America, close to a third, are willing to let that just slip through their fingers? I don't know.
Bob Garfield, I am so grateful that you took the time to speak with me about this. Thank you so much.
Trey, thank you very much. I really appreciate the ear.
That's Bob Garfield talking about a project he's helped create called the Purple Project for Democracy, We the Purple. So far, the website for this nonpartisan effort has ways to learn about democracy, get involved and stay informed, how to communicate with elected officials, volunteer in your community, and even run for local office. Garfield says they'll offer more about restoring trust in democracy as we move into 2020. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this episode is me, Trey Kay, and Kate Smith. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The wonderful people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the West Virginia Humanities Council, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.